The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
As the US and Canada moved into the 1980s, the fear of moral corruption was beginning to take root in the collective imagination of both populations. Media began a blitz of stories and in-depth reports of events that had anything to do with the perceived master of all things evil, Satan. Police and authorities were keen to latch on to any sign of satanic or occult influence in cases that involved murder or suicide, as the public became more and more convinced that signs of Satan worship were hidden in almost every facet of life and was especially a threat to the young, impressionable minds of children, the stage was set for a sweeping moral panic. The accusations and allegations began to fly at a preschool in Bakersfield, California, and this began a chain reaction that would spread from coast to coast that would cost states millions of dollars and take years from the lives of those caught up in the whirlwind of hysteria that led the public to see the devil in hundreds of daycare facilities throughout the nation. This case file joined the theorists as they find a little sympathy for the devil during the Satanic Panic.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing, Case File 189, Satanic Panic. I'm Braden.
I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Andrew.
Ooh. Woo!
Can you feel the haunting begin?
Oh, yes.
Can you feel power of Satan coursing through your veins?
The power of Christ compels you.
Well, everyone knows we sold our souls. We got a shitty deal, but our souls weren't worth that much. So this topic hits close to home for us.
Yeah.
We're talking about the satanic panic of yesteryear, but we really could be talking about a more recent satanic panic as well, because we're, you know, right in the midst of a good old satanic panic as well. I imagine
we're talking about the old one, because that's why you're dressed up like the dude from Nightmare, yeah, the board game.
Yeah.
Is that why?
The OG one. OG, yeah. Satanic
the
Panic.
The power of Satanic Panic.
The gatekeeper, or whatever the fuck his name was.
Was in the 80s. It's in modern times. It was back in the day with burning witches. It's something that kind of like...
I mean, OG Satanic, yeah, Panic could be like 1600s.
Yeah, yeah, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Well, it's like, if you think about now, we had, we were talking about it before the show, you know, we had, what's that guy's name again? Lil Nas with the Call Me What You Want, his blood Nikes, with his real human, a drop of real human blood in the soul.
Scientifically proven to make you run faster.
And, you know, every religious person was losing their fucking minds on that, and the mark of the beast in the COVID vaccines. It's a bad time to fear Satan. It's a great time to hail Satan.
He's on top right now. It seems like,
yeah, he's on top.
If that means getting your vaccine and COVID fucking off, then hail Satan. Let's fucking do it.
Hail Satan.
Let's do it, baby.
I get a jab tomorrow, actually.
How did you get jabbed so soon?
Well, I fucking signed up a while ago. And
it's because you're 4,000 years old?
It takes about 20 doses, I heard they said. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, did you sign up on the elderly list?
Yeah. I don't
extra
know.
Elderly.
I guess I'm important. My studio that's closed.
It's because they saw you and they're like, this dude definitely looks sickly. This guy's got some comorbidities or something.
Let's get him in. This guy's a liability, man. We can't have him in the ICU.
Yeah, no.
Anyways, Satanic Panic, we're going with the version from about 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking
gross.
About...
Forgot 80s or 40 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Early 80s.
We're fuck boys. We're getting old.
Yeah, we are getting old.
God boys. Damn.
Happens to everybody.
Oof. Sad.
I'm like, I'd like to say I'm aging like a fine wine, but I'm more like an old cheese. It's been left in the back of the fridge.
Left out of the fridge.
Out of the wrapper.
Yeah.
Once the hair is gone completely, you're good though, because then you don't change for the longest time.
Yeah.
Those bald guys look the same when they're fucking like they bald guy at 40 looks exact same when he's 60. Right. Point, so you got to get past that hurdle first and then you're laughing.
Silver lining.
Yeah. I was actually going to maybe shave my head before I come down for pod week. Actually, I just shave my head in the summer.
There you go.
Do it.
Do right. it. Keep I'll do it for you. Come here and I'll shave your head and we can play the song from Righteous Fucking Brothers.
Oh, Unchained maybe I should.
Melody.
No, I'll shave
your head for you.
Well, first, I think I should shave in a...
Oh, my love.
No. I got a better idea. I'm going to shave in some fjord hair. We'll leave some really long, thin strands that I can wet down.
Oh, my God.
Please.
A long fucking mohawk is what you need. That's really like slops down.
Yeah. Really thin and then some stragglers and stuff. Like, we'll get some good fjord hair going. I'll do that I'll do that for the live stream of D&D during pod
week.
Do it
for the whole week. Whole week.
Fuck that.
Come on.
I'm walk
why?
Around. I guess I can wear a hat.
Yeah, that'll be fine.
Right, no hat.
More on Braden's greasy hairdos of pod week coming up in after hours.
I can't fucking wait. It's got to be long enough to have a little bit of a pony too.
I don't. After my hours. Hair's not that long.
It's not long enough.
All right. Let's get back into Satanic Panic. What are we talking about here?
Talking about the Satanic Panic, which you began initially, probably if you wanted to put a date on it, in the spring of 1983. So this entire event began when one parent accused a staff member of the McMartin Preschool, which is located in Manhattan Beach, California, of sexual abuse of her son.
Do you know the allegations of that? Like, did the son just tell the mom? That's what I couldn't find out. I was interested in that.
So the name of the parent was Judy Johnson. And apparently, if you go deeper into it, Judy Johnson was a recently divorced, also known alcoholic. She was living in the area at the time, and she had sent her son to the McMartin Preschool. Now, the McMartin Preschool was established in the 1960s. It was a well-known facility. It was family-owned and operated, fully licensed and all those things. And it catered mostly to clientele who were in the, like, upwardly, what could probably be categorized as upwardly mobile parents. But this place was as often packed.
What does like that you, mean?
But it's obviously not as credible as the recent divorcee drunk lady, right?
What's the
like that's
what's right? What's like, what's upwardly mobile parents mean?
So
they
back
could walk?
Well, no, yeah.
gypsies. Upwardly mobile, they're gypsies. That's a nice way of calling them gypsies.
Right. So the you know, back in the
vagabonds?
1980s.
Yeah, gypsies.
Is that what
gypsies,
we're talking
tramps
about?
Gypsies, thieves.
No.
Sheriff sang no, it all about not quite. It to you.
Whores and low life status.
Are you genuinely asking, or are you just?
Yeah,
are you,
I don't know what upwardly mobile parents means.
So, like, upwardly mobile in the sense that in like economic status. So you had people who were back then in the 1980s. It was becoming the whole kind of movement of really like two earn like double earning families.
Yeah.
So you had both the mother and the father working at the same time. And so you would, that precipitated the need for daycare, you know, full-time daycare. Now, the McMartin Preschool was a well-known kind of establishment in this neighborhood at the time and often had no openings. Judy Johnson dropped her kid off at the McMartin preschool with no reservation. She had not registered her son with the school. She hadn't, he wasn't even on the list. And the, but
just fucking, she like left him on the stoop, fucking knocked and ran away.
She pretty much
got confused with the fire department. She's trying to get rid of him.
Well, she left him there because she had to go to work. And so she went to go work and she left her son there. The story kind of goes that the staff felt bad for the kid because you can't just, you know, if they're in childcare, you can't just leave the kid sitting there. What are you going to do? Send him home?
Dude, like, that's send fucking, him away? That's a great move by Judy Johnson. That's a genius level move. Because what? They're not going to leave the kid outside. It's going to look bad on the daycare.
So, they ended up getting the kid registered. They ended up taking the kid in, and he had spent like months at the school itself, at the preschool daycare facility. And at one point, he came home with what Judy Johnson, I guess, either, I'm not 100% sure. I don't think it's really well known about how she kind of found out, but I guess, or whether... how it happened, but Judy Johnson said that he came home one day with a reddened anus.
A reddened anus.
An irritation. Like irritated,
so a diaper rash.
Perhaps. Something like that.
Okay. Right.
Cool. And so she took him to, at first, initially, one medical examiner, like, took him for a medical examination. They said there was nothing unusual. They couldn't find any sign of anything. It wasn't anything really unusual about the case. She took this to be that he was being abused. She took this as a sign, like went straight like 0 to 100. Like he is being abused at this school, sexually abused at this daycare facility.
How old is this kid?
He was at the time. I didn't write it down right at the time, but not very old. This is preschool. Okay.
Yeah. He's like three or four years old.
3 or 4. Okay.
Yeah. So she takes him to, you know, she calls the cops. Tries to get the cops to investigate or do something. They can't really find anything. They're like, there's nothing really we can do. She's still incensed about it. And so she ends up taking the son to a second physician. And this second physician, according to reports, didn't really find anything, but also decided to kind of err on the side of caution. And she took this to claim, she took this to being, there was evidence of abuse. Because the second physician said, yeah, maybe there was maybe something happened.
Told her what she wanted to hear almost.
Pretty much.
Seems like.
But with the gravity of that though, like that's fucking crazy. Like even when you tell her what you want to hear, do you send him for further tests? Like how, I don't want to get too into this because I'm like, you got to examine the certain areas to know it. Like how.
Here's the thing.
This is.
He could have been like this. It could have been one of those things where she's like pressing him and he's like, she's like, was he assaulted? He's like, I don't really know. There's not really evidence of that. She goes, could it be possible? And he's like, you know, maybe.
Well, according to
the gravity of reports, maybe.
Yes.
Well, according to reports, she pressed him about this. Like she pressed him, the child, about what happened to him. She asked him, like, did they touch you at the school? Did they do something to you? And he said, no. Initially he was at all negative, like no. And then she said, like, you know, have they ever done anything to you? Did they give you any injections? Because she had some, she had observed him playing doctor with his brother, his smaller brother, you know, trying to take care of him and stuff like that, trying to just be a doctor. And then she's like, did they give you any injections or anything that a doctor would do? And then the son apparently gave indication that the only thing that they had done maybe was take his temperature. And she took it with a thermometer. And she took this to mean that the thermometer meant...
like anally?
An anal thermometer.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe. I mean, that's...
That's old
school.
What
other kind of thermometer? How else are you supposed to get a temperature?
Oh, Jesus.
Jesus.
Well, not back in the 80s. Like...
That's the old school way for thermometer.
So she took the thermometer to mean one of the daycare, you know, one of the daycare workers' penises. So...
Sure. Oh, so there's the allegation that she brings it to
with no proof.
No proof. Allegation, bring it to police.
This kid could have absolutely had a fucking SkyTrain station lava fucking episode like Braden.
Just burned himself.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, like we're jumping to fucking major conclusions here.
And so she takes this evidence that she feels she has gathered, and she takes this to the police, and the police decide, well, okay, we have enough here to kind of perhaps maybe this, you know, that this should warrant investigation. So
they're going to ask questions regardless. They're not just going to go.
Yeah.
They're not going to go, yeah, send her on her way. Right. Like,
so they're like, okay, so maybe we should ask some questions about what's going on. So the police decide that it is the most effective way to do this would be to canvass the neighborhood around the McMaster preschool. And they would sent out letters asking parents to question their children and see if they had any reports of sexual abuse at the McMartin preschool. Oh.
Well, because you can just see how this shit can spread like wildfire, because like there's nothing in this world more innocent and beloved than a child. Mm-hmm. These are your kids. And like the minute anyone floats the idea of a diddler, like, fuck a diddler? Diddlers? Oh, we got to fucking figure this out. We got to find out. Grab your fucking pitchforks. Grab your fucking torches. Let's fucking go. Like
you're like, they're like shaking the kid. Did they touch you? Did they touch you? You're like all scared. Probably like, oh, okay. Yeah, it's okay. Like kids are freaking out.
And you guys are absolutely right. So it is just, to me now, it seems a lot really crazy, because it's like, if you 100% wanted, you know, intentionally wanted to start a panic, this is how you would do it. You would ask parents for evidence of sexual abuse, because then the parents would take that immediately to mean, oh, there's sexual abuse going on at this daycare.
They wouldn't be investigating it if they didn't have something, basically, yeah. Right?
So you like, in the subsequent weeks, like you have outraged parents who are, you know, rightfully so concerned for their children.
Yep.
You know, whether or not that it is warranted is another question, but it's just like they are worried about their kids, as any parent would be. And so these parents go and question their children, you know, and perhaps their children, some of them don't give them anything. They say, no, what are you guys talking about? And then these parents would go and they would meet with each other and then get each other worked up even more. And then they would question their children again. And then they would take small little, admissions and things like this. And then this pretty much, they would take this to mean that there was, you know, widespread abuse occurring at this preschool.
Well, it's tough when you ask a kid questions. I mean, kids, that's a hard question to ask a kid because they don't know what it is, right?
I can't convince my kid not to shit his pants. You know what I mean? And he's not that fucking younger than these kids. Like, I can't explain to him, like, that goes in here, not in your pants. It's a lot less fucking comfortable to do it in your pants. And he'd just laugh at me and do it. You know, he'll be like scrunching his face and be like, what are you doing? Don't do that. And he's just like, I'm doing it. And there's nothing you can do about it.
So, yeah. You know? So the hysteria starts, all the families start questioning their kids collectively almost. So just by sheer volume and like amount of times you ask that question, eventually what they start hearing stuff that leads them to believe that there's other cases.
Right. So it's kind of like it's a bit of a feedback loop. If you think about it, cause it's like parents go ask their kids something, the kid says something kind of weird. Cause the parents, I mean, as much as love has to do with parents, like loving your kids, you're not exactly like not all of them are interview specialists. Like, yeah. You're going to ask questions and you're going to get answers and you're going to interpret them different ways. And you're not exactly going to know what to do with that information. Then you go talk with another parent and they say some stuff. They're like, well, I heard this and I heard this. And then, you know, it's just a huge gossip explosion of what's going on. Now, into this investigation is going, cause the police were still doing this, that the police decided to bring in, a nonprofit organization. They decided to bring them in to consult the Children's International Institute, or CII, which I think now is actually, they've changed their name to Children's International Incorporated, I guess what their current name is. And they had experience with dealing with sexual abuse cases in the past. So the police thought this was a good idea to bring them in to try to do this. And they assigned social workers to come in and interview these children for details on the abuse. So now during the investigation
or interrogate,
I'll say interview. The police allowed some of these some of these social workers who are, some of them not 100% on the level. I they're not, not that the fact that they were trying to do anything or intentionally trying to do things, but perhaps some of them were not as trained as you would probably want people to do or experience as they want. The police actually brought in one of their unlicensed, it was an unlicensed psychotherapist named Key McFarlane to conduct examinations of the almost 400 children who attended that daycare. Now, McFarlane is actually known for one of the first people to use anatomically correct dolls. And that for these kinds of interviews.
Like, we talking about dolls with P's and G's, like the whole thing.
Right. So it's one of those things, like, who hasn't seen like a scene from a movie or a TV show? They take out the doll and like, where did they touch you?
Yeah.
Right. That's what was happening. This is one of the first, big cases that utilized that technique.
Yeah. It's sweet. Your kid's getting the birds and the bees talk by psychotherapist Keith McFarlane with his sex dolls.
What's the difference between like a psychotherapist and just like a psychiatrist?
One's crazy.
I've never heard psychotherapy.
Right off the top of my head, I am not sure.
Yeah,
you'd have to look.
I never heard that psychotherapist, and it says he's like an unlicensed psychotherapist, doesn't it? Like, yeah. He wasn't actually, it's not an accredited title, or at least he wasn't accredited.
Yeah, I'd have to look more into it, but yeah. as far as I found, like there's this caveat under Key McFarlane that he was unlicensed psychotherapist. Whether his license had lapsed or perhaps like something like that, or perhaps he just never got it. I'm not 100% sure. So
psychotherapists use talk therapy to treat their patients for emotional problems.
Stress. Yeah. Stress, depression, yeah. Anxiety, insomnia, addiction, bipolar. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But he's unlicensed psychotherapist.
Right. So, of the 400 children that he interviewed, he ended up getting the results of about 321 counts of child abuse that were leveled against 7 of the daycare staff members by 41 children of the children.
I can only imagine the fucking outrage once it, like, all the parents, I'd be like, let's burn the place down with every single one of them in it. All of them, do it now.
Guilty in public opinion instantly.
Instantly. Like, doesn't matter.
That would happen later. The McMartin preschool would end up being burnt to the ground at one point. Yeah, it did get burnt down later.
That's horrible. Why are we laughing? But it's
but some of these stories that these kids were that came out from these kids. Now, you'd be like, oh, okay, you know, maybe these kids were saying, like, oh, the daycare employees were abusing us, they were touching us inappropriately, they were making us do weird things. You know, that stuff was part of it, but also you get these stories that came out from the children that were took to be actual, you know, solid evidence of some sort of strange, satanically tinged, or in some cases, fully satanic rituals going on. You had testimonies, or some of these kids, like from their interviews, there was mention of, I'm going to go into the full list right here.
All right, let's get into the list.
Ingestion of bodily excrements in human flesh, digging up and mutilation of corpses, sacrificing infants, orgies with daycare providers, wearing costumes as devils or witches in the classroom, tunnels under the daycare, tunnels under the daycare. This is still orgies. So orgies in tunnels under the daycare, orgies at car washes, orgies at mansions and in airplanes, cemeteries, what? Gourmet food stores, local gyms, churches, and in one case, at least, probably in hot air balloons.
How? Hold on. These are fucking 3 to 5 year olds. Like, yes. Have any of you guys had a conversation with a 3 to 5 year old?
It's nonsense.
It's fucking gibberish. 90% fucking gibberish. You're explain, like, that is way too fucking detailed. Like, that, I don't understand.
Honestly, that all comes from confession of the kids, all those
yes.
places.
Yes.
How does a kid know what a fucking orgy is?
Hey, listen, 3 to 5? You know,
I blame the parents. Why does your kid have, why is orgy in a 5-year-old's lexicon? That is fucked.
Hey, it's not, though. It's not. This is what happened.
Yes,
happens.
It is.
Key McFarlane
didn't fall far from the shit tree. All
Key
right?
McFarlane sitting there with the kid, and the kid's fucking speaking gibberish, and he's writing it down, and he's going, oh, mutilation? And the kid's just speaking gibberish, not even making any sense. And Key McFarlane's just like, oh, or another orgy. Whoa. I don't believe these kids were saying the
orgy.
Oh, we had,
there's no way.
We sacrificed infants, and there was an orgy. Like, it doesn't make any.
A 5-year-old saying, "Yeah, they fed us excrement." Like, yes, yeah. Like a 5-year-old is gonna say, "Like,
well,
come
he's
on.
Probably you know he was probably like poo poo
doo doo,
yeah, doo doo
baby."
Okay, the orgies are one thing, but also the digging up and mutilation of corpses.
Like what the fuck? They brought the kids to the cemetery.
Dig to the ditches, man. Wait,
during the day. Like the kids drop them off
field
at preschool.
Trip.
They go field yeah. trip. They go down to the cemetery.
All holding hands, walking down to the cemetery.
I always think it's creepy when I see people walking with a kid on a long string of rope and they're all hanging on. I'm like, they're up to no good if you ask me.
They're on their way to the cemetery.
They're on their way to the cemetery. They're going to dig up some corpses in the middle of the day as you do at daycare.
I mean, like, getting them organized enough to do that. It's like herding fucking cats. You don't want them to dig anything? You crazy?
You know, as you guys are right to question, you know, why would the kids be aware of any of these types of actions that it's like the kids shouldn't be, you know, as young as them, be aware of any of this stuff. Like, they shouldn't have knowledge of any of this, right? So people, you know, as recently as like, you know, a couple years after this whole thing kind of happened, there have been multiple studies of the interview techniques that were used during the interviews of these kids. And a lot of academics and a lot of papers that have gone through the transcripts of these questions have come to the conclusion that the questions that they used, like Key McFarlane and those social workers from the Children's International Institute, they were questions that were pretty much tailored to get responses that they wanted.
Almost like they were professionals.
Well, they were going to get the answers that they pretty much wanted. That one of the ways is like they would ask like these kids questions in a type of
leading.
Right. Well, you'd have like all these types of different weird ones. So you'd have like, asked and answered, right? So you would ask a question like, can you remember the naked pictures? And the child would shake their head or give a negative no, right? And then the interviewer would say something like, can't remember that part. And then the kid would shake their head and say, well, why don't you think about that for a while, okay? And your memory might come back to you. So then the kid goes ahead and thinks like, well, what? Like, maybe it happened. Maybe my memory isn't thing. So, you know, most kids want to give adults like answers. They want to be seen in a positive light. So they would have the kids would end up giving them answers that would indicate, you know, what these interviewers were really
looking
after,
for,
you know?
What they were looking for.
It's just the worst part about this too, right? Because these people are interviewing children. So they're the champions of these poor kids that have been fucking abused. So all this bullshit they're doing is completely cloaked in fucking sanctimony, right? Like, they're doing the right thing because they're fighting for these children, yet they're fucking ruining people's lives. Like, so fucked.
They ask all those questions, like, that starts, which is the preschool, but in the end, don't they end up getting like convictions on like babysitters and coaches, neighbors, whole bunch of people.
A whole neighborhood.
Well, not even convictions, but they had accusations leveled at people outside of the McMaster preschool. So you had, babysitters, soccer coaches, neighbors, own parents.
Town of diddlers everywhere.
You know, one of the best ones was the actual town's mayor's wife, who apparently owned a station wagon. And then they said that she carried around dead fetuses in the back of her station wagon. And then even members of the Anaheim Angels baseball team were roped into it. Like,
how does she get her hands in all these fetuses?
Fetuses,
like, rolling up in the abortion clinic and being like, you done with that? Can I take that?
So, the satanic panic was not like a 1 year off thing. This lasted for years. So even into, you know, I think they kind of put the range of this whole thing up until 1992. You could still make arguments that it's still technically kind of going on. But in 1986, a Los Angeles Times reporter, you know, just shortly a couple years after this, you know, it's 3 years after the initial kind of stuff started rolling, actually revealed a poll of LA County, Los Angeles County residents that showed that 80% of the people asked in the poll believed that all seven of the McMartin preschool staff that were brought in were guilty.
You're guilty of, in the court of public opinion, if soon as you're involved with anything to do with diddling. So if you're accused, even though no can't substantiate the claim, as soon as you're accused, like everyone's just, that's how you now are viewed.
Yeah.
Like it's hard to come back from that one. Of all like all crimes, that's the one that if you're accused of, even if you were completely innocent and you get roped in, that's the one that's the hardest to come back from.
So of the five criminal cases, or of the seven, of the total of seven criminal cases that were laying out, like that we went to, five of them were thrown out for lack of evidence. And the only two to go to trial, the actual trial, were Raymond Buckey and his grandmother Peggy.
Jesus.
Now, in 1986, so this when the trial was going down, Peggy and Raymond, and actually her daughter Peggy, or sorry. So Peggy McMartin Buckey, her son Raymond, and the daughter, also Peggy Ann, were all charged with 135 counts of molesting 14 children.
35 accounts.
Yeah, 135 counts.
100. Oh.
The trial lasted 28 months and it cost the state of California $15 million. And to this day, I thought this fact was like outdated. I was like, no way this fact could hold up for that long. To this day, it was the longest and most expensive criminal trial in the U.S. history.
In the full U.S., not just California?
In all of U.S. history.
$25 million. That's the most expensive? That seems low, but I take you.
28 months. That's like 6 years, right? No.
28 yeah. months? That's near two and a half years.
Come on. Yeah. 28 months.
2.5 years, so, and $25 million.
Yeah. And so Raymond actually ended up serving 5 years in prison and Peggy served two before the actual collapse of the case, because there was a serious lack of corroborating evidence.
Were they in jail because they couldn't afford bail? Like pending their trial?
Must have been.
Is that how that worked? Is that how they serve? Because he would have served five. There's like, unless he was sentenced, he wouldn't serve time unless he couldn't afford bail. So then he would have been in jail for like pre-custody?
Well, their sentences were eventually overturned.
Yeah, but he's still going to jail labeled a fucking diddler.
Yeah, I know.
Oh my God.
Holy shit.
Ooh.
Room handles and
all.
Is
that usually how it works? Like if I got, say I got convicted of a crime or accused of a crime and I was in trial, I was in jail and I had like $100,000 bail. If someone posts that for me, I can be out of jail during my trial. Is that how it works?
Yeah, until you're found guilty and sentenced. Well, that's how it works in Canada.
If I can't post bail, then you stay in
custody until you're at the end of your trial.
Oh, shit.
I don't think daycare workers are making much money, so
no.
I would not be surprised if they couldn't.
And they probably posted bail at something ridiculously high.
Oh, man, that's fucked.
Yeah. And so this would set off eventually a tidal wave across the country, not only in the United States, but Canada as well. There would also be a number of cases that would follow this and would follow pretty much the same exact pattern. And you had this going on for 10 years or so.
For you to say that exact same pattern, when I first started reading into this case, I legitimately thought, I was like, I've heard this before. What the fuck? I thought this was a Canadian case. And I was so confused. And when you say that this kind of wrapped up in 92, in 1993 in Martinsville, Saskatchewan, I won't get into the whole thing, but basically a woman had her son at a daycare, brought the son home, noticed a reddening of the anus, took the son to the doctor. The doctor was like, no, I don't see any signs of sexual abuse. Took the son to a second doctor who was like, I don't see any signs of sexual abuse. Went to the police and the police opened an investigation where then they went and talked to all of the parents at the daycare who gave them all sorts of fucking
answers.
And this thing got so fucking out of control in Saskatchewan that there was over 100 charges at one time in connection with a cult, a satanic cult called the Brotherhood of the Ram, and practicing ritualized sexual abuse of children at this so-called Devil's Church. It got so bad that even the officers, the original officers that were involved in the original investigation, four of the five were actually later on accused of being participants. So then they were also investigated criminally. Like the whole town, it was insane. Everything got thrown out because there was no evidence of anything. And the government had to pay $1.3 million in malicious prosecution payments out to people. But like,
handing out a ton of sorries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A ton of them.
You know, I look at this and I'm like, God, it's like the exact same timeline of events, the exact same way, almost on the heels of, you know, this one in the other Martin place. It's Mick like Martin.
Carbon copy story, pretty much.
Yeah. Instead of Mick Martin, you got Martinsville.
Hmm. Yeah. So this whole thing, it's like there are a ton of things, or more than a few, that we can talk about that are what precipitated this entire thing. Because it wasn't just that the parents went straight to, because you'll ask yourself like, well, okay, you know, child sexual abuse is a thing. It happens. It's a sad fact, and it's terrifying. Horrifying. It's terrible. And it's really bad. But to jump straight from that to satanic, what they called satanic ritual abuse, SRA, like how would you get there from that?
Because the only person who would do that is Satan.
So how?
Well, you need somebody to blame.
Need someone to blame.
Like, absolutely, somebody to blame in this situation.
That's the thing. And Satan or Satanism or the whole kind of thing was on the mind of, at least in North America.
Totally. It's been on the mind for a while. Like, you got to bring it way back to in 1966. Anton LaVey started the first fucking Church of Satan. He wrote the fucking Bible of Satan. Now it's depicted a lot differently than everybody thought it was. He used Satan as a symbol for rebellion and freedom and all this other shit. Mm-hmm. But then after that, you started getting all Rosemary's Baby, The Exorcist, and all these, fucking supernatural devil fucking type, movies start coming out. So it's starting to get pumped in everybody's minds. And then next thing you know, you got fucking Manson in 69. Same year that he produced his Satanic Bible. So this is on, the minute that Manson, the people realize that this kind of stuff can happen in real life, not just movies. A cult can go out, attract suburban white people, these innocent people, and convince them to go out and murder people.
Yeah.
Right. So this is and then you go to the 80s where, you've got military conflicts, you've got financial crises, shit's hitting the fan. You got to find a new person to blame. You've already blamed the Nazis. You've already had the Red Scare. Who are you going to blame next? Who better to blame than fucking Satan?
Dungeons and Dragons and Satan.
Well, the other thing, to speak to kind of the atmosphere of the time, the term serial killer was, started to gain notoriety in the 70s. And in the 80s, you had the Night Stalker who was going around and just murdering people and mutilating corpses for real, really doing that. And you had Son of Sam who in his trial was saying that, he was possessed by the devil and stuff. So you had all these notorious serial killers at the time, perpetrating these heinous crimes. And, a lot of this was getting attributed to satanic ritual killings and stuff like that at the time.
Well, because you couldn't, you had to blame it on, you couldn't just, this guy just couldn't be bad.
It doesn't make sense. Yeah, you need to, people want to understand why.
I could be bad or my kids could be bad. No,
Satan's
because
bad.
They're possessed by the devil.
They didn't pray. They didn't pray at dinner. Yeah.
Didn't pray hard enough.
Mm-hmm. Masturbated too much.
Sinners.
Mm-hmm. that all kind of rolls into the, you could probably label those as contributing factors to the explosion of this panic which can be, I guess you could take the definition. If you take the definition, a collective stress reaction in response to belief in a story about immediately threatening circumstances, those would all be contributing factors to it. So you had the, you know, the proliferation of proliferation and you could say popularization of serial killers, of, you know, Satan as this evil force that is, you know, permeating the, you know, or corrupting the social fabric of the United States and Canada. But there was not only that, but in 1980, you had a very fresh, there's a very fresh book that was published that gave real credence to kind of like, it gave people who read it, and it became like a kind of a phenomenon. But do we want to take a break before we talk about it, or do we want to keep going?
I was going to say, my glass is empty. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
I hate God.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
We're back. And if you're talking about the Satanic Panic, and if you're listening or reading anything about the Satanic Panic, it's almost impossible to for those people, an author or a podcast, not to mention the 1980 book Michelle Remembers.
Oh.
So Michelle Remembers was a book that was submitted as a biographical account of memories that were recovered by Canadian psychiatric patient Michelle Smith about memories that she had from childhood of ritual abuse that she had suffered. So this book was actually written by Smith herself and her psychiatrist, Lawrence Pazder, at the time, whom she later married. And if that's not a conflict of interest, I don't know what else is.
Yeah, I was like,
got a little bit of a Celine Dion and what's his face scenario going on here.
And Tony.
Or something like that, isn't it?
You know, marry the manager, marry the psychiatrist, marry your...
I think marry the psychiatrist is worse.
Yeah,
I would agree. So Smith detailed the abuse that she had experienced at the hands of her mother and other members of a satanic cult during the mid-1950s in British Columbia. Now, Pazder originally had been treating Smith for depression following a miscarriage, and he claimed to have helped Smith to resurface these memories by using hypnotic regression, which we have talked about, you know, Betty and Barney Hill case. We've talked about it
many times.
It's not Dr. Sprinkle. It's not credible. Plain and
yeah,
fucking
if it's
simple.
Not Dr. Sprinkle, then why would you even try it?
I'll waste your time.
Well, and just to give anyone here listening that's not from Canada, or you are from Canada, on Vancouver Island, since I've been here, it's talked about how Victoria, BC is like a satanic capital of the world.
With nukes.
And why people think that, I believe, is when you go, well, there is a satanic church there, but just about every single building in like the old part of downtown, like everywhere you look has like Masonic symbols and stuff on the architecture and like built upon. So I think that's where that gives it a lot of credence when people think that.
It's probably why you move there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up.
It's almost like the Masons built half of Victoria.
Yeah, almost.
Oh, shit.
With underground tunnels.
Connecting.
And nukes.
Isn't that Nanaimo with the
it's
nukes?
All coming together.
Yeah, Nanaimo's the nuclear free city. No nukes, no nuclear weapons. Says so on the
Nanaimo.
Sign.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly what a city would say
exactly.
if it did have nukes.
Well, that's what I'm like. So what do I assume if a city doesn't have that sign, they have nukes?
Yes.
Every like, city's got nukes.
So the book actually ended up earning Pazder and Smith more than $340,000, and it's pretty much skyrocketing success just in hardcover and paperback rights alone. And it, a lot of, you know, people who have talked about this, it became a phenomenon. Like it nailed a lot of stuff, and it gave people almost reason to suspect your neighbors. Like, you know, it's suspected that, you know, this depiction of ritual abuse that happened and just, you
could
know,
be anybody.
And, yeah. Could be anyone. If it could happen in your family, could be your neighbors, could be your, you know, extended family, could be anybody.
Your co-host,
right? Your co-host who lives suspiciously near the satanic capital of Canada. You know, in 1989, almost 10 years after the actual publication of the book, Oprah Winfrey had Smith on as a guest on her show alongside another guest, Laurel Rose Wilson, who's the author of another book which depicted satanic ritual abuse, which was also submitted as a survival memoir or labeled as a survival memoir. Yeah. And so and Pazder went on, you know, such popular news interview shows such as 2020. He was on ABC News's 2020 in the May of 1985. And
that's a wild ride. First off, that's a wild ride. That 2020.
Yeah, it was a multi-part series. I sent the guys one while I was doing my research. I found a clip from the 2020, which is called The Devil Worshippers. So if you want to look it up on YouTube, it's 2020, The Devil Worshippers. I specifically cited part number three, which I always thought was pretty much the best part. Because this one specifically lists out the satanic clues that you should look for if you are trying to find the Satanists in your neighborhood. So number one, coffins.
What is it?
Coffins.
Coffins. Just like coffins. A coffin on your, on you got one on your deck or they got one in their backyard.
Or they have,
if you're out
they
there,
have had,
you've got a cough, Satan worshipers.
Or coffin.
Coffin.
Oh, coffins.
Anyone with coffins. A cough, Satan worshiper.
If you have slept in
COVID
a coffin or
and
you've been
Satan
in a
parallels
coffin.
Parallels are ridiculous here.
Getting out of control.
Two.
Well, hold on. With the coffins, they said with the coffins, it's like, well, they use these because they make the children lay in the coffins with the bodies. And it's just like this weird older woman. And I'm like, I don't believe anything this woman's telling me on the show right now. I was like, what? This doesn't make any sense. They just lay in the coffin and then
sounds like a fucking Satanist over here trying to like displace fucking suspicion. I'm sure it doesn't make sense, pal.
That robe gives them away instantly.
Two, paraphernalia. Paraphernalia, anything that indicated any type of, you know, indication of some sort of satanic intention. So it could be pentagrams, could be could be, you know, black candles, could be
spooky robes.
Spooky robes. You know, elaborate goblets. Or things like that. It's really, yeah. That
you got one of those.
Satanic clue number three, kidnapping.
Yeah. You get caught kidnapping.
That's something you look for and you find everywhere. Like, well, this guy's been kidnapping for a while.
I wasn't going to say anything, but now that you mention it.
My neighbor's a kidnapper. I know he worships Satan. I see him kidnapping all the neighbor's kids. You've got bigger issues. Like, you should maybe call, you know, you should snitch on the kidnapping, not worry about, is this one of the seven ways I can figure out if he's a satanic worshiper?
Well, dude, if you got coffins on your front porch, that's a red flag. Just maybe not for,
you know, coffins, you know, pentagrams on the outside of your house. You know, you're also kidnapping kids left and right. Your neighbor might be a Satanist. Also number four, sexual abuse. Cause of course you can't have Satanism without sexual abuse. They kind of go hand in hand, according to some people.
Yeah. Some people that are involved with the church, ironically enough.
But that's the best part of this whole situation. It's like the first stories we have of babies being consumed and kidnapped for the devil were fucking in the ancient Roman times, and they were said about fucking Christians. Right? Yeah, like Christianity was an early religion then, and they were an easy scapegoat. So that's what you do to scare people away from Christians and Christianity.
Yeah, and then the Christians eventually said it about the Catholics.
Exactly. Oh,
no. Flip the script.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. It's just ridiculous.
So it's then, like that, it's like that old Spider-Man meme where both the Spider-Mans are pointing at each other.
Yeah. So yeah, like Andrew said, you know, eating babies. So number five, satanic clue, cannibalism. So, you know, if they're eating people.
So don't go to any of your neighbor's houses for a dinner party, because you just never know.
And then number six was cremation, because that's how you get rid of the evidence.
The best part about 2020, the best part of the 2020 thing, that interview, is they say cremation and then it pans to the girl and she goes, and that's why they probably haven't found any evidence or any bodies.
Yeah, there's a part in there where the narrator says, like they list out all these clues and they say none of this has been proven.
Yeah, but we'll still
comes out and says none of this has been definitively proven.
But we'll get to we'll continue to get to the bottom of it. I'm like, what?
Bottom of what?
And as more cases come forward, as more evidence is found, it will confirm these claims or whatever.
They have this old hobo looking guy. He points to his wrist, which you can't see because it's four fucking 360 grainy YouTube video. And he goes, this little scar here is where my friends used to drain my blood for the rituals. We'd mix it in a wine glass with the urine, drink it four times a year for the ceremonies. And then just pans away from him like, no, go back to that guy. I want more of that guy.
So you kind of had this. Now, I guess you could kind of put this into the, like when are you would kind of point to this fact as a definitive end to the satanic panic was in 1992 when the United States Department of Justice actually published a monograph, which is a long essay about a singular subject. And it was for actual investigators, which was written by Kenneth Lanning, who is a supervisory special agent with the FBI's Behavioral Science Unit in Quantico, Virginia. And this one systematically debunked claims of ritualistic occult abuse in the United States.
So it only took them like 10 years to get to it.
Right. And so like a little background on Kenneth Lanning. Kenneth Lanning, like his role was actually as a case consultant for hundreds of cases that were said to have involved satanic ritual abuse. And some of them were not in the United States at all. So he'd like globally, he was kind of just the kind of clearinghouse, or he saw himself as a clearinghouse of all these cases. So he went through all of these reports. He went through all of these case reports about satanic cases, which people claim that this, you know, SRA, satanic ritual abuse, was part of the case. So Lanning published this report, which critically examined a lot of these definitions of Satanism. And what he found was like a lot of the definitions that people use to describe Satanism were really fluid. Right. So you could not only the people, but also the law enforcement agencies that were investigating them. So not only like, you know, state.
What do you mean? It's super easy. You don't like it. It's Satan. Right.
Black or white.
You don't like it. KFC French fries. Satan.
You know, and Lanning went forward to go ahead and highlight the indicators that would. Much like the ones that we just described, these clues of satanic, you know, influence or whatever, the kidnapping, the coffins and things that he went through to kind of debunk them. It'd be like these actual indicators were being used in law enforcement police training seminars.
Yeah, expert, like, and investigators became experts in these techniques, and they were like, that's what they would use in all these cases. And then this guy comes out and tells this.
Yeah, you'd have cops busting in the doors and being like, this guy likes heavy metal music. This dude plays Dungeons and Dragons.
Suspect.
Automatic SRA.
Okay, like heavy metal music. Okay, yeah, they use like, you know, they use the devil symbolism and a whole bunch of stuff. And then, like, okay. And then Dungeons and Dragons, it's a role-playing board game. I never understood how that got lumped in just because they use
wizardry and shit. Dungeons and Dragons uses a lot of stuff. Well, you can't have a warlock without making a pact with a demon. So,
I guess.
You know, you got, Dungeons and Dragons does deal with some, you know, demons and devils.
Yeah, but you're always killing them, you know?
Right,
I was getting rid of them.
It's just the fact that you're interacting with them on some level. You know, it's
it actually brings joy to my soul that someone might listen to us one day playing Dungeons and Dragons and go, believe we're Satanists.
Listen, these people were so upset with Dungeons and Dragons they created a coalition called Bad Bothered About Dungeons and Dragons. That's fucking real. Seriously, there's this kid. So there's a university student in. I want to say it was in 1979 in August. He goes missing from Michigan State University. Go Spartans. So he goes missing and the police go to look for him. They find a suicide note. They start asking around. They're like, what do you know about this guy? Or where do you think he might be? And the other students are like, yeah, I don't know, man. Like he's depressed. He's tired. He's been overworked with school. Yeah. You know, what does he like to do for fun? Oh, well, he likes to play Dungeons and Dragons.
Boom.
Boom. That's what it is, baby. He got way too enthralled in a fucking game of Dungeons and Dragons, went crazy, and went fucking scouring around these tunnels and went missing. That's what happened to him because he was possessed by Satan.
That's an easy leap.
Well, it's so fucking crazy to the point where...
Case closed.
Well, so, you know what I mean? So everybody's on this big fucking kick that Dungeons and Dragons is about demons and devils and stuff like that. They ended up making a movie about this exact same situation, about a guy that plays Dungeons and Dragons, gets possessed by the devil and goes crazy. One of fucking Tom Hanks' first starring roles in a made-for-TV movie. It's like, was it Dan? Demons and Mazes? It's called.
Oh, I don't know.
Called,
man.
It's called Demons and Mazes. Not Tom Hanks' first satanic-esque movie. I want to kill everybody. Satan is good. Satan is your pal. If you know what that fucking is from, I'll be extremely impressed. If you don't, I won't be surprised.
I do not know.
Don't Google it.
Okay.
If our fans know where that's from, I'll be fucking pumped.
Quick Easter
egg. But yeah,
Easter
egg from Andrew. Like, and that's, pardon?
It's an Easter egg from Andrew.
A little bit of an Easter egg. But like, that's just the first touch of the mass fucking invasion of Satan and like popular culture. And like, I'm not even going to start with the metal, because that was like what everybody goes to, but it was stupid shit. Like, they went after the owner of McDonald's because some lady in Akron, Ohio said she saw him, admit that he gives half his proceeds from all the worldwide McDonald's to Satan. So he had to go and do an actual interview and say, that's not fucking true.
Don't do that.
I don't know what this person's talking about. I don't know where it came from. And then all over the fucking United States, they start putting out in church newsletters that McDonald's is donating their proceeds to Satan. And then stuff like Procter & Gamble, a company that's famous for making household products, like cleaning products and stuff like that. Their symbol had 13 stars in it. Well, they assume that's fucking... That's satanic.
Well, why would you have 13 stars if you're not?
If you're not.
Because apparently it was the original 13 colonies of the United States. But anyways, these people had to make a toll-free number for people to call to explain to them that like this is a misconception. And then on top of all that, they had to switch their fucking logo.
Man, doesn't that sound familiar, shit like that though? It's almost like, was Procter & Gamble selling closets with kids in their catalogs?
Well, exactly though. And then you go into like fucking cartoon characters, Thundercats, satanic. We had to go after He-Man's fucking castle because it comes with a microphone and it makes your voice really low. And that's satanic.
Mm-hmm. Smurfs.
Well, Smurfs' skin's super, blue and their lips are black. So they look like corpses. So that's evil.
Satanic.
Mm-hmm. Rainbow Bright. If you look closely at Rainbow Bright, she has a pentagram on her cheek.
Satanic.
Yeah.
Satanic. There's 100% no if, Satan. And buts a fucking about it. Mm-hmm. And then you get into the fun, most stereotypical part is rock and roll.
Of course. Right?
So from what I understand, most of this rock and roll stuff stems from Charles Manson. Charles Manson was the first person to kind of come out and say, there is subliminal messaging about Satan in rock music. He starts like with Helter Skelter. He says, Helter Skelter was predicting a fucking race war. Right? That was his big thing by the Beatles. And, you know, there was a little bit of truth because there were bands like the Beatles that did what they called was backmasking, where they did put lyrics in songs that when you played backwards, you could understand them. So this fucking started planting a seed in everybody's mind. So everybody started playing rock albums backwards and started hearing things or thinking they were hearing things, right?
Right.
And like, and which like there's a perfectly reasonable explanation for that. It's called pareidolia. And basically the human brain has a tendency to try and make and search out patterns, right? So you show them something that doesn't make any sense and you instantly want to make a fucking pattern of it. You want to turn it into a symbol or a face or an image or a word that doesn't make sense. You're instantly trying to make it make sense. So these kids are playing these albums backwards and, you know, oh, that kind of sounds like this because they're trying to search out. Like that's just your brain's natural tendency to try and do that.
Well, I mean, Zeppelin's known on their album cover, like Zozo, you know?
Well, that's, we all know Jimmy Page is a little bit of a fucking shady dude, but that being said, there is no proof. Like it got to the point so badly that these two kids in the fucking 80s went on a drinking binge and decided to make a suicide pact and fucking kill themselves. One kid died. The other kid was not successful, but had life altering injuries. Well, you know, the parents found out that these kids love fucking Judas Priest, just like everybody else in the 80s.
Satanic.
And sued Judas Priest for $6.2 million.
They didn't win.
Because they felt that they had subliminal messaging in their songs.
They didn't win the case, though, did they?
No, they didn't. But
still,
to their credit, there is subliminal messaging in songs. We do know that. We know that Dan loves The Simpsons.
I do.
Ni vet eat niage. That's why Dan fucking joined the Navy.
Wait, so
he's a huge fucking party posse guy.
What's the, what's even yet Nijosh?
Join the Navy. You gotta do your homework, pal.
Oh, it's join the Navy backwards? Oh, is that their is that how they got you?
That's party posse.
That's how they got me. So they got me. It works. Scientific proof it works.
Are you saying that in Stairway to Heaven it doesn't say, oh, here's to my sweet Satan?
It says join the Navy.
Here's my sweet Satan.
Join the Navy.
Devil.
Yeah.
Oh, they say join the Navy.
Power is Satan.
In the first part.
666. Boom.
I mean, they did it with Zeppelin. They did it with the Rolling Stones. They did it with, mentioned the Beatles again.
But you get to some good ones. So it's not just satanic sometimes, though. I got to play one more because sometimes they just turn out to be awesome.
Oh, yeah.
It's fun to smoke marijuana. So they're not all satanic. I mean, I guess, no. That's a lie, I guess, because marijuana, satanic.
Dude, that's the devil's cabbage.
Right there, yeah, that's my
devil's
bad.
Nice. That is the devil's cabbage, man.
And look at our world. Everyone's smoking it now.
Yeah, everyone's satanic, everywhere you look. Yeah, I mean, you can go looking in that, the satanic panic spread across North America. These are some of the bigger cases, but like I'm sure every state, every province, every region had some type of form of like local satanic panic. It might not ended up in, a 2-year court case, but that spread across and it spread quickly and it took a long time to subside. So
I don't think it's completely subsided, dude. Like,
no, it's
growing up in the 90s
changed.
I wasn't allowed. I would try to wear my Metallica shirts and stuff like that. My mom would always be like, that's evil. That's satanic. Don't wear that. That's awful. Take it off. You know, like that shit is still around within the religious communities and it's exhausting.
We're seeing it right now. We're literally living in a satanic panic right now. There's people who think the vaccine is the mark of the beast.
Bill Gates is the new devil. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah.
Are we saying that here first?
Is Bill Gates even involved like in manufacturing the vaccines or?
I think he administers every one.
Is he?
Yeah, I think so too.
Does he own all the vaccine companies? He's got perfect control of them all.
It only makes sense. And we do know now that Melinda he got divorced because he was riding on Epstein's plane all the time and trying to give everybody microchips and it's just not a good scene, man.
Okay, let's do final thoughts. I'll give a quick one first. I mean, satanic panic, people always try and blame something. As we said, like you need someone to blame. And in this, like child abuse, whether it be physical, sexual or verbal, that's real stuff. And that's terrible and has to be stamped out. But to just like put it in the, like when they put it in the news and like they pretty much created this panic out of hysteria, right? And like, for me, it's like, this is not the first time it's happened. It's happening again now. It's happened in the, it's happened throughout history, like vilifying the devil or Satan, whoever Satan may be. But yeah, I mean, in the end, all these cases, a lot of them got overturned. I think there's still a handful of people in jail and they'll just never get out because they don't have representation. Like they'll just be in there, serve their sentence, and you'll never go out. So I think it was just, first of all, I think it was bad police work to like, I'm not an expert detective by any means, but you look back and you see them just go public with this notion that there could be pedophiles at this one thing and they'll allow the parents to pretty much make the story up with their kids. I think it was just a mishandled situation that seems to be human nature in general, right? We're always looking for the enemy, someone to blame. So that's what I think. Child trafficking is a real thing, and that's a whole different topic. And like that is still going on today. And that's like, there is real terrible child exploitations going on in the world, but it's not just, say the satanic panic was not handled correctly.
No, I couldn't agree more with you. I think it was manipulated. Like I go back, like when I was doing my research, I found something I thought was really cool with that, to touch back on that Anton LaVey guy, the founder of the Church of Satan, supposedly. And he had this nine satanic statements, which were in the Satanic Bible. And basically says Satan has been the best friend the church has ever had because he's basically kept them in business for the last soever years.
It's true.
And you look at it and then like in my brain, I think they manipulated the situations like this fucking daycare, you know, ridiculous situation that they had and manipulated to use it as an attack on counterculture. You know, like this to me, the satanic panic is like today's cancel culture. We don't like this. We don't like rock and roll music. We don't like these fucking cartoons. We don't like Dungeons and Dragons because it's going away from these normal traditions and our routines and things are changing and we don't like that. So we're going to stamp all this stuff with a Satan symbol and fucking banish it and get rid of it. And then the church uses it. Like as soon as this stuff started popping off, we started getting Christian contemporary music, Christian cartoons, Christian comics and all this shit because, you know, people still need entertainment and they want to be able to watch something that's approved by the church. And this is approved by the church. Mm. So this is okay. So they use it to their benefit. And I honestly think this is just basically a fucking
genius marketing.
One of the first forms of fucking cancel culture. Honestly, I do. That. Like it's
well crazy to me to think that this 10 years of, you know, investigations and all this money stems from one drunk lady. Right. Part of me wondered
just to add to that. Yeah. She had a history of alcoholism. Later she was institutionalized at a mental hospital and she ended up dying of liver failure due to years of alcoholism. Oh, so just, yeah,
it's like for real. But the thing like you see with these things, the narrative's very similar. Like when you hear about these tunnels, these secret tunnels, you know, where they're moving children, where have we heard that? Right. I believe there was a pizza shop in Washington that also had these tunnels that didn't exist.
But didn't actually have a fucking basement.
Didn't have a basement, right? Like the narrative is strikingly similar. And it's funny that we can consistently get fooled by the same fucking narrative. Now, the thing about this, like that I hate to say with these cases is that like when I was like reading up on it, it's like, you know, you read the things about the child abuse and that happens. It's real. Like it's terrible. It's a terrible thing. It happens. You know, I read about these people using children to lure other children. That happens. It's terrible. It happens. Right. Then you start to look at like, you know, in society, we see these secret societies like that. There's tiny grains of truth. But this like wraps all those things that are on the brink, like pushes them all together. And it's like, this is why it's all together. But it's like each one of those things separately. It's like, yes, it happens. There are weird secret societies that do weird fucking shit. Right. We've talked about Bohemian Grove and their fucking weird stuff there. Right. Skull and Bones. You know, there's tons of these weird kind of fringe things that give imaginary, like these wild ideas about, and you hear, and then all these other things happen. But to me, it's like this just wrangled all these things into one and not very well. And people ran with it because all of it had a little bit grains of truth because these things happen individually, separately. Did I think there was like a widespread satanic cult running out of a daycare, digging up bodies in the daylight. Like, no, I didn't. I don't believe that. But it's like, you know, you look at some of the stuff that happens, like, you know, got Epstein's Island. It's kind of a weird one, right? Like, so you get nuggets of truth. You get nuggets of truth, these things. But I think this was a little bit of mass hysteria.
A little bit.
Thinking that this stuff is happening under your nose in your neighborhood. Your neighbors may be involved. Like, it was one of those things that it drummed up business for everyone. The church, media, it was a hot button topic. And it you know, it was selling papers. So if it's selling papers, you keep printing it. And I think it, you know, we've learned that that kind of shit does more bad than good. And I think a lot of people's lives were hurt from this. And it's funny because we say it ended in 92, but then it picked right up in Canada in 93, like huge province-wide investigation, getting like the exact same thing unfolded. It's crazy to me, but I think it's just all these things wrapped in one, but there is unfortunately some grains of truth to each part of the stories.
Dan, take us home.
So if you zoom out on this period of time, you have to really look at a number of sociologists and psychologists have kind of taken a critical look at this time and how society was developing as a whole. So a lot of academics will go ahead and look at this time and they'll see a very definite separation, which had originally had been a definite separation up to this point of what is known as like the covenantal and contractual social spheres of society at that point. So covenantal being the family. So your obligations to your family, your kids, your parents, all of that thing. And then the contractual, which would be your obligations to work, labor, market economy. So these two spheres had been separate up to this point. There'd been a very solid kind of definition between the two. But when you move into the 80s, you had this kind of, there was a bit more strain from the economy that was placed within the covenantal sphere, which ended up precipitating a movement that made female participation in the market economy more appealing and more accessible. You had more women wanting to enter into the workforce, and you know, the labor economy, market economy was making that more appealing. Like, you should go out and work. There should be two parent earners. You know, two parent earner families is the way to be successful. That was made as kind of like an appealing situation as way that we should be. So now these economic strains would end up affecting the families in such a way that daycare became a necessity, because your extended family, you know, your sister, your sister-in-law, your brother-in-law, they couldn't take care of your kids anymore. You know, your baby boomers, your mom and dad, like, who were still working at this point, they weren't retired. Everybody was still working. And so with all of your extended family being motivated to participate in this labor market, you had people unable to provide childcare. You had nobody to ensure like the proper socialization of your children. So this made child daycare a necessity to, you know, be North American society at the time.
Well, right? Isn't this that's where the term latchkey kid comes from, is it not?
Yeah.
Like the kids that come home to no parents at home because they're both working.
Right. And so unfortunately, up to that point,
I turned out fine. Just
right. Me too. And a couple of kids, you know, a couple of years before that point, you had these deep cuts in federal funding for public care centers, because those did exist. Public child care centers, just like they do now, you had public child care centers. And with these deep cuts in funding, this ended up, you know, the consequences were inevitably you had rising costs to parents, you had overcrowded facilities, and you had staff that were underpaid. So you had these facilities. And then at that point, also, you had this kind of blitz of this media blitz. So, you know, to Brayden's point and everybody else's point that the media is complicit in some of this or has some is a major contributing factor is definitely, I would see that as a 100% correct, because they were showing these facilities that were overcrowded and whatever. So it made kind of you had to put more pressure on the family unit to like take care of their kids, to be more critical of these facilities that were taking care of their children. So now you have these parents facing a dilemma, which they had to weigh economic success, both parents going out and earning money, providing a, you know, a stable economic environment for their kid to grow up in, versus their the proper socialization of their children. And which do you choose? Right?
The Satan, so Satan school.
Satan.
Right. So you have these, you have the parents like are facing this extra stress. And so when, you know, the perfect kind of storm, like you have this kind of sentiment bubbling underneath the surface, coming to a boil, but nothing really can set it off until you get this, right? Mm. This gave the parents, you could say that this whole thing, the Michelle remembers, this whole thing, this phenomenon that happened gave the parents a focus and a reason to be critical of these, where to place their anger at a system. They weren't really sure, because it's like, it's really hard to blame an economic system to lay it on that, you know? Like you can't just be like, well, it's the economic system, at least back then. Right. You can't just be like lay all your troubles at the reasons like we designed this system. It has been, you know, propagated throughout our society. Like these problems it are a lot more complicated than Satan. Right. Satan gave them a focus. It gave them a reason, or it gave them, you know, this is a place to put our rage. It's much more difficult to go forth and find out and criticize the economic system that is being propagated in your society versus that's evil. That's Satan. I know that's wrong. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
So if you zoom out and you look at it from that lens, the sociocultural lens, I think you find that, you know, it is one of those things that you had the system was putting pressure on the parents, but they didn't know where to put their anger and to put their outrage. But once you bring morality into the thing and this kind of, you know, our kids are in trouble and are in the clutches of evil that we know is evil.
I'm a big fan of it's usually if the simplest explanation is usually it. And after listening to your explanation, I believe there was satanic pedophiles running that childcare facility.
Simpler.
Yeah. Case in point.
It's way easier for me to believe in all this.
It's way, yeah, all this exactly. Hocus, it's way pocus. Easier to be like, Satan is evil.
Yeah.
And they're doing things. And my kid mentioned something about
coffins. You're using a lot of $10 words, my friend. Satan did it.
Yeah. So say, you know, big words, and then you can go ahead and say that Satan did it. And then it's what do you want? Big words or Satan did it?
It's not rocket appliances, boys. Satan sucks.
Satan did it. Satan did it.
Did it.
It's a goddamn devil.
I hate him and he stinks.
Nice.
Before we do anything else, get on our Patreon. If you're listening to this, it's Friday. We are in the midst of Pod Week. We're in the thick of it. It's a good time. Get on our Patreon, patreon.com/AlienTheoristsPodcast. Directly support the show. It's going to be a good time. Also, we've got some interviews coming out. When you're listening to this, will one be released, Sal?
Yes. Kevin Day will be out. So you've already listened to it, probably.
You've already listened to it. And we're coming up with an interview with Avi Loeb. And as you're listening to this, we've got an interview scheduled with Mike Masters. They're going to be very super interesting. So you're going to want to head to our patreon.com/AlienTheoristsPodcast to get on that. Why don't we fire up the Randomatron here?
Why do I always two forget. Buttons?
Whoa.
There's two buttons. Went on. There we go.
New one here. That sounds good. You're gonna, that sounds good. Woo. Best it's ever sounded.
All right. Oh, shit.
Some Satan music.
Heavy metal. This is satanic.
One day we're just going to find like the call of the mongers, like a whatever, and just play that. I think we should do that.
I don't even know what a mongoose sounds like.
Sounds just like this.
No.
Right here. That's the sound of a mongoose, baby.
Happened to a friend of a friend of mine.
Yeah. So at the beginning of these things, you know, obviously, sounds stupid if I don't say it in first person. So I'm going to say it in first person because got to make it sound good. It's not Rocket Appliances. So this particular event takes place in a, let's say, like an interior town, kind of deserty type climate.
Small city,
kind of maybe like a vacation town too.
Tourist town.
Like that kind of thing. Tourist town.
Maybe like Penticton?
Kind of, yeah. A lot like Penticton.
Okay.
A little bit more of like a drive-through town than Penticton, but anyways.
Yeah.
So this particular call comes in mid-afternoon. No big deal. Comes in. Neighbor reports loud yelling and banging. Knocked on door. No response. So those type of calls, we usually get dispatch code 3 because we don't really know what's going on. It sounds pretty suspicious.
What's code 3?
And we need to go there quickly. Code 3 and check that shit out.
So, what's code 3 though?
Lights and sirens.
Go. Make yourself known on the way?
Just emergency. Get there as fast as you can.
Gotcha.
We got code 2 and code 3. So we take this call, particular code 3. We know this address quite well. It's pretty close to the downtown core. It's low-income housing. It's usually where
Satanists.
A lot of people who hail Satan and smoke meth live.
You're under the poverty line.
Types of drugs. This is probably where you're living, unfortunately. So the downtrodden.
I was going to say you support Satan. But.
So we respond to this place. You know, the fire department's coming. We get it announced on the way. Dispatch is like, fire department's going to be delayed. There's a 3-alarm fucking fire. 4-alarm, whatever the hell it is. Whatever those guys do to justify their fucking hefty paychecks. Anyways, fire department's fucking tied up. So we show up, bang on the door, no response. Thinking I might have to Chuck Norris's fucking door down. Hope I don't, because we have to pay for it. Luckily, it's unlocked. Go in, house is disheveled. Doesn't look like anybody's been there in a while. There's rotten food on the tables. There's dust. Not a great place. So it's one of those type of places where the door opens and you're like, hey, is anybody there? Can you come to us, please? I don't want to go further into this place. Nobody responds. Fuck.
Damn.
So getting ready to do a preliminary sweep. A lot of these situations, you're fear for the worst. All of these calls, you'll end up finding a dead body, that type of stuff. So you're like, you're already preparing yourself. So as soon as you step into this small apartment, there's a door to the left, which looks to be the bathroom. So I'm like, okay, there's a better place than ever to check. Twist the doorknob, go to open, and right away it's a thud. Thud. You're like, what the fuck, right? So you go, and there was just enough room for you to kind of stick your head in. And you look, and the door is bouncing off a rather large man's forehead. And you're like, oh, that's why we can't get in. Maybe I should stop hitting this guy in the head with the fucking door. So pull the door back. I look at my partner and I explain to them, there's somebody down in the bathroom. Can you please get the BVM out? I don't want to jump to conclusions, but this could potentially be an overdose, whatever. So I stick my hand in through the door, find a carotid. Nice, beautiful, strong carotid. Have a look. I don't see any chest rise. I don't see any effort to fucking breathe. So I pop open his eyes and have a look at his pupils. Pupils are pinpoint, leading me down the thought process that this man has potentially overdosed on some type of opiate-related substance or something that was laced with opiates. Mm.
Too much Satan.
So, too much Satan. He's overdosed on Satan. Hailing way too much
Satan. Never overdose on Satan.
This guy apparently did. So this was quite a tricky situation because our friend of a friend is actually, he's built like me, smaller guy, you know, nimble, very mongoose-esque, little Spider-Man-ish.
Not nearly as handsome, though. He's hard to look at.
Not fucking awesome. No. Yeah, guy's hideous. Guy's a fucking hideous chud. Anyways, is able to jump into
grotesque,
this room,
you would say,
over top of the body. Okay. Very difficult considering the fact that this is one of those bathrooms that if you were to sit on the toilet, you could touch the toilet, you could touch the sink, you could touch the fucking bathtub and the door, all from the toilet seat. So this bathroom is fucking tiny.
Yeah.
And the unfortunate part is when our friend of a friend jumped into this bathroom, the fucking light switch was right along the door as well. So when he jumped in, he hits the light switch, lights go out. He's in the room kind of being like, oh, fuck, I can't see anything. Whoops. Partner's like, oh, don't worry, I got you. Flicks open the light, passes you the BVM. You're like, okay, great. Start bagging the individual, try to get a sat probe on their finger. And then once you start bagging this person up, you start oxygenating them. You take a second, kind of look around. And you look over the bathtub and holy fuck. There's a person in the bathtub.
Oh.
So immediately put down the BVM, tell my partner, we have another patient. Get up to go look at the patient, and he said, never mind, we don't have another patient because this person is clearly dead and has been dead for a while.
Oh.
Obvious signs of lividity, blood pooling, early signs of decomposition. The bathtub water does not look like bathtub water anymore. It's not a good sight. Oh. So I keep calling. I called my partner. I'm like, hey, can you find out from dispatch? Can we get an ETA of the fire department? This man is approximately 6'3", looking to be about 230 to 240 pounds. The bathroom he's in is basically his feet are up on the fucking ledge of the bathtub. One arm is in the toilet and his head is blocking the entrance to the door. I'm like, the only way we're getting this guy out is if we pop the fucking door. Well, fire department is tied up and we don't have any help and there are no other ambulances available. So we run it, keep bagging them, Narcan. We're up to 1.4 milligrams of Narcan. This guy's still not coming up. Big issue we're having right now in BC is the fact that our opioids are down, our fentanyl, our heroin is being laced with benzos, which means they're sedatives, which means you might reverse the respiratory arrest. They're breathing on their own again, but they're still unconscious. Right. So far, we can't fucking fix the respiratory arrest. The guy's not breathing on his own, and he's not conscious. So this is a fucking clusterfuck. So basically, get to the point where I'm gonna bag this guy up, and my thought process is I'm gonna grab this guy by the knees, this rather large man, grab him basically like I'm going to put him in the fucking lion tamer or a sharpshooter and start inching him back away from the door so I can get my partner in to help me carry this guy out because we have to get him out. So that's my plan. I start pulling. Well, like I said, this other sad individual was in the bathtub. Water had somewhat overflowed from the bathtub. The floor is quite slippery and there's not a lot of room. Our friend of a friend fell backwards into the bathtub with the decomposing body.
Your friend of a friend touch the water?
In the water.
Oh, like right in.
In the water. On the lap of a person that had been dead for approximately 6 days.
Some say a bathtub could be likened to a coffin. So are you telling us that you were in a coffin like...
Satanic.
Satanic people.
Boom.
Yeah. Not me.
I mean, friend of friend.
Not me. Friend of a friend
is a 100% Satanist at this point.
In my books,
we ended up getting this individual out of the fucking bathtub. And as we were taking them out, our friend of a friend had to turn their pockets inside out to get water and people fluid out of their pockets and their boots.
My friend of a friend is friends with your friend of that friend. Yeah. And my friend was telling me that his friend sent him a snap. Your friend sent him a snap of him dumping out water from his boot.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm surprised there wasn't a fish coming out of the fucking boot. There's so much water in there. Our friend of a friend had to buy new boots because of this. Tossed all uniform, had to buy brand new fucking boots because it was decomposed, junky body.
Yeah, you have
grossness.
You gotta throw
everywhere.
That out
it
wasn't instantly.
Good.
Satan juice.
Yeah, exactly.
So then proceeded to help lift this giant man while gagging the entire time into the hallway and resuscitate them, all the while to get this person back, regain fucking consciousness, start breathing on their own, to get up and tell us to fuck off and not get transported by the ambulance. This person found his mom dead in the bathtub, decided to use.
Well, I wouldn't want to be transported by Satanists either. So,
that's fair. Yeah. Anyways,
it's a thankless job sometimes, isn't it?
I heard your friend of a friend now has scoliosis of the spine, basically.
Our friend of a friend is probably going to be off work for a bit because he's got a pretty extensive back injury from hauling fucking Shrek.
It was
unconscious.
A lot of dead weight.
Out of the fucking bathroom.
A lot of dead weight hunched over.
Like crazy. No matter what, no matter how much weight you can lift, when it's in the human body form that's unconscious, it's fucking
dead weight. It's gross.
Sweaty fucking grossness that there's nothing good to like. It's, oh man, I just fucking, it's awful. Anyways, yeah, there you go.
Whoa, there you go.
There you go.
Oh, no, thank you.
There you go.
There you go.
There you go.
All right, let's shout out our theorite of the week there, Andrew.
Yes. Just one second here. I got it pulled up. It is Jericho Tonkin.
Jericho Tonkin.
Phenomenal choice for our next future pod trip.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
To the fucking moon, Alice.
To the moon.
That's goals.
Took our.
I'm not going to space, Jericho. I appreciate it. It's a cool picture. I'm not going to space. Too scary.
Took our picture of us at Chicken Pizza.
Scary. Way too
put
scary.
Put us in space.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
You're out of the.
I mean, I do like that I'm got the guns out on space, though. That's cool. You,
make sure to go check out all this great fan generated content on the Facebook group.
I mean, I'd much rather go to Juniper or something like that than the moon.
Juniper.
Venus and Gatorade.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. If you're not already, Brayden already told you, go support us on Patreon so you can get access to a live stream, all the good stuff, Pod Week, all the other goodies. I'm sure even on Pod Week, we might do a couple public streams, but we'll talk about it later. This week's Patreon supporters, Chris Moreno, Gustavo Topete goes up to the $25 pledge.
Woo!
Nick Collins, Summer Price, a full year pledge by Patrick Meyer.
Nice.
Rumple Foreskin goes up to the $25 pledge as well. Adam Miller, Thomas Evan, Tara, Dylan Wells,
Zedano,
and a full year pledge by Vegeta Steals Yo Girl.
That's a good name.
He would do it. All right. Send it off there, Brayden.
And as we always say at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the skies.
Peace.
Want truly hydrated skin? Meet Osea's body care breakthrough, Hyaluronic Body Serum. It's clinically proven to increase hydration by 161%. It's lightweight, fast-absorbing, and delivers 24 hours of hydration for silky smooth skin without any sticky afterfeel. Treat your skin to clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order with code SUMMER at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code SUMMER.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.